pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning. Last day of the week for the program. Last hour of the week for the program. Coming up here in about a half hour, Gary Palmer, congressman for the 6th Congressional District, will be with us. We'll get his read on politics in D.C. And we'll talk some America 250 as well. So please stick around for that. Joining us now, we usually do this on Fridays, but we'll have Fisher House tomorrow. State Senator Chris Elliott, our returning champion, joins us here on the line. Senator, good morning. How are you?
I am doing great. It's a beautiful day in South Alabama, and I got to go play hooky this morning and go fishing with my son. So that was fun.
I bet it's nice and cool out there, isn't it?
It wasn't too bad. We quit about 8 o'clock, and so it had gotten up to about 82 degrees. So we missed most of the heat, caught some Spanish mackerel right off the beach, didn't have to run too far, and got back home. So it worked out well.
Sounds like a productive day already for you. Hey, this is coming up, and we've talked about this before, the bridge situation, and I guess we're having a little buyer's remorse here. There's some hope from the mayors down there, Kennan and Kraft, that something's done to just make it two-way traffic on those bridges. Is there any prospect of that, especially if there's a new ALDOT director?
So I know both of the mayors have been pretty vocal with Coach about that issue, and as well as some business interests down there for obvious reasons. And I think that there may be some traction there. I hope there is. But we have to understand how we got here, right? There wasn't an option to build a brand new bridge right next to the existing bridge and utilize the existing infrastructure that was already there. Remember, we have four lanes going to that one two-lane bridge that was the toll bridge. And it would have been, in my estimation, practical to put another bridge right next to it and use those existing lanes. But we couldn't do that because the state didn't own that property, right? The toll company did. And so in ALDOT's mind, and probably more specifically the ALDOT director's mind, he had to force the toll company into selling him that bridge before he could make this scheme that is currently working out happen. And so the only way to do that was to build this other bridge in a completely different location. And so that's what he did. And the reason it is what it is likely because that was the least expensive option, right? If you just have one-way traffic going in one direction, you don't need to have as many safety features to keep cars apart, and there are fewer lanes from a turning standpoint and everything else. And so the reason it is designed like it is, and the reason there's a whole nother roadway to get to it, is because Director Cooper was right in the middle of trying to, we're going to call it negotiating to be generous, with the toll company. And that's why this thing developed like it did. Should it have gone that way? Certainly there are a lot of arguments that it shouldn't have, but that's why this happened. The bridges that exist right now is not designed based on what is the best traffic flow or what's best for one community or the other. It was based on what will force the toll company to sell us that bridge.
Here's the question then, if you go two ways on those bridges again, who's going to use that middle bridge?
Yeah, so I think that the tourists will by and large use the more of the Orange Beach Bridge. And I said Orange Beach, the bridge there at the wharf, if there's another span there, because most of the traffic is coming out of Orange Beach on that side. The answer to your question, though, is probably Gulf Shores residents will use the other bridge. And that's because it spits out right there by the Gulf Shores High School now that has been constructed. And so I think, you know, part of Mayor Kraft's frustration is there was at least initially an understanding that that was going to be a two-way bridge. There were a lot of decisions made by the city based on, you know, a reliance on that. Like, we're going to put a $150 million high school right here. And then that changed after the city had made certain plans. And it really put Gulf Shores in an awkward position where those residents are having to go all the way to the wharf to then go north to get to that high school. And so they're driving to Orange Beach to get back to Gulf Shores. And it's an odd pattern, but it's odd because of the leverage that was trying to be applied to the toll company to try to force them to sell their asset. And that's how we got here.
Is there the possibility ever someday of going through Gulf State Park? I mean, it may be 20 years and just building a connector there to the beach and opening that up.
Yeah, there's a very real possibility of that, and it won't be 20 years before that happens. There is a federal court order that was part of a settlement agreement between the state and some environmental groups that was related to BP funding being used for the renovation of the Gulf State Park and specifically the lodge that precluded the use of what is a road just back west of the fire station there off of Canal Road. In Orange Beach to build what has always been called the Cross Island Connector. And there's a roadway that goes about 90% of the way all the way down to the beach road. And there's a power line that goes down. And you can drive, well, you're probably not supposed to drive, but a vehicle can drive all the way down or almost all the way down to the beach road. And so that's been seen by locals as a very logical way to get traffic down to the island, to the beach, without it having to spill through the cities itself. And so I think we have a number of years left on that agreement. There was about a 20-year moratorium, if my memory serves me correctly.
Bentley, right? And
that's right. Yes. The ghost of Robert Bentley. And so there are only, you know, probably 6 to 8 years left on that agreement. And you know how long road projects take to design, permit, et cetera. And so I think that in the next administration, an argument could certainly be made that we need to start looking at what the design parameters would be for that, what the cost would be, what the environmental implications would be, in all fairness, and how we make that happen, and if we make that happen. And so once I think you go through that process, then you're going to be running up against that prohibition time limit, and you could actually move forward with a project if that was determined that that was the way to go. But I think we can start talking in the next year or two about that being a reality. And listen, we're going to have to continue. I mean, we're going to have to continue to look at roadway improvements. We're going to have to look at new bridges. We're going to have to look at new ways to get folks around. We, you know, not too long ago, widened Canal Road with restore money largely to that 5 lanes that it is now because it wasn't nearly sufficient. And the next thing is, you know, the bypass there behind the Tom Thumb where 161 turns down to the beach. And so that's funded. Jerry Carl was instrumental in getting some of that funding from the feds, and Senator Britt was instrumental in making sure it stayed in there. But those are things that are on the cusp of happening. But we're going to be building roads in Baldwin County for the foreseeable future because we grow at 8,000 people a year, and then we have 8.5 million visitors that come here a year. And the combination of the two means we are going to be growing. Our road capacity has got to be growing, and that's something I fight for every day in Montgomery.
And I guess while we're on this tangent here about roads, going north on the Beach Express from Buc-ee's north up to 65, any movement on that?
Yes, there is movement on that. And the County Commission, at my urging and others down at the beach, has been proactive in starting to acquire some of that right-of-way. And that's the time-consuming part, right? That's, you have to go through the courts and the condemnation process and everything else. And so they have been starting to acquire that right of way. My hope is that the next administration and the next governor looks at this right of way that's already been acquired by the county commission. The county commission, I think, is going to be prepared to give it to the state, just as they just got through giving the Baldwin Beach Express to the state. Right? We need to go ahead and carry the water, do the work on the front end, show the vision of how this is going to work, hand it over to the state, and then let the state construct the road itself. But if we wait for the state to realize it needs to happen, we wait for the state to go through the condemnation process, it will take another decade to get that done. The commission's done good work in moving ahead on that so that is a foregone conclusion. It just needs the funding and it needs the state to move forward. But I think the next governor and the next LDOT director are going to be very keen on that project.
Any sense of what direction that's going to look like under Tuberville? We haven't talked a lot about cabinet or any of that, but I think we're getting close enough now to start kind of wondering, like, what's Montgomery going to look like this time of year from now?
Yeah, I've had some very limited conversations with Coach and his staff, and so far they've been good. He's been very focused still on being the United States Senator, which we need him to be right now. But I expect that as these as these residency challenges go away, they will be much more focused on transition. He's, you know, in my mind, in your mind, and most anybody that's thinking, he's the Republican nominee. He's going to be the governor. Now it's you know, they're moving into transition. And so as they put their transition team together, I expect them to start looking at key cabinet level positions. And of course, Aldott's, you know, certainly one of those. And so I'm hopeful that we'll have an Aldott director who is keen on solving problems in areas of this state that generate revenue, and not necessarily as keen on spreading the wealth to other parts of the state that frankly have been getting more than their share, okay, under Governor Ivey. And so, you know, the way to grow the pie and the way to truly develop our economy is to make sure we invest in parts of the state that are growing. That's us. That's Huntsville, right? Those areas in particular, it's Auburn to some extent. You know, where are places growing? Where do we need the road capacity, and not just necessarily where do we want it or where would it be nice.
So take it you weren't at the ribbon cutting for the Linden bypass last week, were you?
Well, I'm not so sure that rural Alabama needs a bypass. That seems counterintuitive to me. But, you know, the governor says that is an economic development project. It seems antithetical to me. And I think most folks in rural economic development that I've talked to. But she's the governor for now. And we have the Aldott director we have for now. And no, I was not invited to the ribbon cutting.
Yeah, when have these kind of bypasses ever really, I mean, and you know, there's a few that have come up in the last 20 years around the state, 280, some 43. I mean, they're not like big places of growth where you bypass these towns where the road used to go through town, are they?
Bypasses seem to work in major metropolitan areas where you hear the, you know, the loop term used, right? And then those areas grow up around the metropolitan area. They tend to be disasters for small towns who are trying to attract more attention, attract more traffic to their small towns, certainly not to bypass it. That again seems to me and to most small town economic developers that I've dealt with over the years. That's the last thing they want.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it worked kind of with the Folly Beach Express or 459, the creation of Hoover. I mean, you're right. In metropolitan areas, they should spur growth, but you're spreading what is amounts to really nothing out around more, and that's ideally. But I still haven't figured out the mystery of the West Alabama corridor there, but it's coming along. It's one of the most efficient highway projects in the history of the state.
Well, I think that's because this governor and this Aldott director knows that they absolutely must show substantial progress, so substantial that it wouldn't make sense to stop the project before you have a new governor. And they very well may do that. They may be very successful with that. I mean, I'll say this, if the West Alabama corridor is 85% complete, you know, when the new governor says, hey, we really shouldn't have done this, you know, it may not make very much sense to really change there. You may just say, well, this is something we're going to have to live with. This is going to be a vestige of the Ivey administration that is, you know, we are encumbered with and move on. It may not make sense to cancel a project that's that far along.
Yeah, we'll see. Hey, Senator, we got to leave it there, but thanks for hopping on short notice, and we'll talk again next week.
Thanks so much for having me. Y'all have a great 4th of July.
Thank you. State Senator Chris Elliott. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Still on scene. I gave you my heart, and I tried to make you happy. And you gave me nothing in return. You know it ain't so hard to say, but would you please just go? Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday morning, 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the program, just hit us up there. Dave, I think the support for Israel was much stronger in the South than it is now. Let's keep going here. A named texture, I metaphorically spit on the governorship of Ivy. May all Alabamians do the same forevermore. She did some good things. I don't know. Like, it is mixed. It's disappointing. We haven't seen her in years. Just be candid, frank, have a conversation with somebody that's not preconceived. She doesn't have a dozen handlers around. And they text your traffic getting crazy. Be careful out there. We're trying to flee the beach, but I'm anticipating a bumpy ride heading north tonight, or this afternoon, I should say. Michael, this eve of R250th, I find it disgusting that those ultra-Israel supporters always seem to play supporting a foreign country of America. The Zionists don't want to be despised. It's a little bit of restraint, but instead, they're flying Israel flags at the American 250 fair in D.C. I saw that. I don't know. I mean, I don't necessarily have a problem with that. It's just, it's kind of like a shoulder shrug, like when you see the Ukraine flag on some people's front of their house. But it is, I guess, a little off-putting, I guess, at an American 250 event. Fire Dog. 285 is now as much of a nightmare as it is trying to drive through downtown Atlanta. It is, and at least with 75, 85 there, it's like 20 lanes of directions through downtown Atlanta. They just got done widening 285. When you get to the airport, and if you take it 285 toward Chattanooga or Greenville or wherever, it's now widened. That old stretch of 285 used to be just... it was just for what it was. It wasn't enough capacity. They finally got a little bit of that finished. Ultra Runner, speaking of our beautiful beaches, where they highlighted in our state 250 on the mall. I know our world-class trails and mountains were highlighted, deservedly so. What sets our state apart is you could surf and fish the Gulf and hike Cheehan the same day. Alabama is incredible. Probably not. Well, the shortest coastline in the Union. I guess you could, well, you could do that in California. Was it my, my late father talked about you could go surf in the morning and go skiing later that night or later that afternoon. Not quite there. Mike adds, it's the same thing. Dang thing is these morons with the Palestinian flags. Well, the difference with the Israel versus Palestine, the Palestinian flag has been flown in times of terrorism. It has certain connotations, violence, I guess, fairly or unfairly, well, probably fairly. And that's why that's abhorrent. But I don't think you see many, there's not many Palestinian flags flying in an A-250, is there? I haven't seen that yet, and that wouldn't surprise me. I'm going to tell you, Mike, the whole Zionist movement's here to stay. It's not going anywhere. And as long as you have people in this country, we have freedom of expression, speech, I say this all the time, they're entitled to be big supporters of Israel. I think maybe they overreached a little bit with this Iran saga. And there may be repercussions that make it more difficult for the Israeli government going forward. But it didn't take America long to get in this like kind of war fatigue footing, particularly with the gas prices. You know, more people may be coming around to your school of thought because of what's happened here and seeing that there are direct repercussions to the country when we do something like that. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Can't you see what you do with me?
up late again watching TV with my best friend, laughing at the late night show. I don't know what's wrong with me, 'cause I know I need my rest, but if I don't stay up all night, sleep all day, I ain't at my best.
Yes, welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Yes, thanks for staying with us on this, what's left of this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. Time permitting, we will respond to your text. Joining us now, he represents the 6th Congressional District here in Alabama. Been a regular on the show for a while. Always enjoy getting him on. But Congressman Gary Palmer is with us. Congressman, how are you?
I'm good. A little frustrated that we're not getting some things moved on the floor, but we'll work it out.
Well, before we get into that, tell me something. Braves, have they broken the curse of June, you think?
You know, I know people think I'm a total nerd and all I think about is policy, but I've been looking at potential trades because I don't know what's happened to their bats, and I knew their pitching wasn't going to hold up. But I'm hoping they're going to make some trades. They've got some really good prospects, but I mean, to start like they did and then to fall off a cliff, but it seems like they always have a June swoon.
Yeah, well, and something about that, I mean, we may not have baseball next year. I think you got a shot at making a run. You got to do it now. And, yeah. You know, as much as I like some of these guys in the farm system or Fuentes or J.R. Ritchie, I think for this year I might be willing to part for just not knowing what the future looks like.
Well, they need another really good starter, and they need a shortstop and another outfielder. So you need to work on that.
The Ha-Seong Kim experiment is been woefully underwhelming, and I can't believe he's still on today on the roster. So we'll see what
batting
happens.
Under 100.
Yeah, 068.
Yeah, you probably couldn't give him away.
No, and he just, I think they rushed him back. He didn't have a spring training, and he's just never, and they tried to force it, but it never really quite took off. I don't know why Mateo isn't starting every day, or at least Dubon or something in that spot, but anyway, we won't go too much further into sports ball for our listeners. Hey, the Save America Act seems like that's what is kind of caused the halt here. And trying to get it attached to some things, but the Senate, is there any path other than ending the filibuster to get this done in the Senate, you think?
Yeah. I've laid it out for the White House, and I think, and I've laid it out for Mike Johnson. Mike's actually mentioned this in an interview he did, but the way to do it is to take out the extraneous stuff in the bill that doesn't really have anything to do with honest elections. And what we would do is say that the federal government will pay the states to issue the photo IDs. We will pay them to issue the birth certificates, and we will pay them to clean up their voter files. That way it can be done through reconciliation. And I'm going to revert back to the nerd part of my personality. And what that means is that in order to do reconciliation in the Senate, legislation cannot have an incidental impact on the budget. In other words, it's got to impact the budget. And the only way to make that the SAVE Act reconcilable is to have the federal government pay for the states implementing it. The way we can do that is Katie Britt and I, by the way, I'm an original co-sponsor of the SAVE Act, but Katie Britt and I introduced a bill called the Citizen Ballot Protection Act that hasn't been brought up in committee, in the House Committee on Administration. If they were to bring that bill up, Jeff, to mark it up, they could do something called an amendment in the nature of a substitute and substitute a bare-bones SAVE Act with the photo ID, proof of citizenship, and cleaning up voter files in the bill, and it can be done through reconciliation. And so I think at the end of the day, that may be what we wind up doing. We added the SAVE Act to the National Defense Appropriations, which we thought the folks that like Anna Paulina Luna would agree with. And last minute, they decided that wasn't enough. Now, I really don't understand why. So,
well, they're
trying to figure out a way to do it.
They're very organized on this. And I guess this is just sort of the nature of having such small margins in your majority.
Well, I think this is counterproductive for us because it's a gift to Chuck Schumer that we're not passing the kind of legislation that we need to pass and forcing it over to the Senate, especially doing it through reconciliation, because you can pass those with a simple majority. And it forces the Democrats to vote. Right now, they don't have to do anything except go out and tell the American public that the Republicans aren't doing anything.
Joined by Gary Palmer. He's congressman here on the program. The one thing, and I saw that you were on with Amy Beth and Allison talking about it, but these elections the last couple of weeks, New York State, Colorado, like there's a wave here inside the Democratic Party towards socialism, and I don't know how far that goes and how much that's going to impact things, but they got some real home fires to put out.
Well, I don't think I've ever said I'd correct you, but I will correct you here. These aren't socialists, they're communists. I mean, the Democratic Party went socialist a long time ago, but it's not far enough left for these people. They're flat out Marxist communist. And Jeff, if you'll notice, what they've done is they've shipped people in. The woman who beat Dina DeGette in Colorado is not even from Colorado. She moved there from New York. And a lot of the funding is coming from the grassroots support. It's coming from a guy in Shanghai, China. He's truly a bad guy. He's put in hundreds of millions of dollars in this, and they're targeting these urban enclaves where they can organize people and turn them out. I don't think, you know, they would be successful, for instance, in Alabama, because we don't have those concentrations of population in urban areas like they do in Denver and Chicago and New York. You know, you name the city. You may see this play out in the mayor's race in Los Angeles, where this lady came out of nowhere to challenge Karen Bass, who's a communist herself. She was a big supporter of Maduro and Castro. But they've got an enormous problem, and I can tell you in the midterm elections, I don't know that there's ever been an election with a sharper contrast than what you're going to see here.
Well, I feel like with that contrast, that's a contrast you guys want. Like you want to show you got this. This is the fork in the road and you got to pick a way that, you know, this may work in, like you say, concentrated urban areas. I just don't think it wins in the rest of the country.
It doesn't. And here's a couple of things. I pointed this out to the speaker, to Mike Johnson. And I told him, I said, first of all, and this was before the Colorado race, I said, well, those two wins in New York, that's going to give the squad enough members to take over the leadership of the Democrats in the House. You add this, the one in Colorado, and I promise you, Jeff, AOC, Tlaib, Omar, that crowd are going to be the ones who decide who the leadership team is among House Democrats. But the other thing, and I really think this is important, there are millions of people in this country who came here from Russia and from East Germany and Venezuela and Cuba and places. They came here to escape the very things that these people are campaigning on. And I really think we have an opportunity to broaden the Republican base, because this is a something that they've experienced, or their parents or grandparents experienced, that they do not want in this country.
Right. And, you know, the thing is, I'm still a little pessimistic, but, you know, some of these prognosticators like the Cook Political Report and Larry Sabato, they got Republicans holding on by a seat or two in the majority. Who knows what happens on election night? But let's just say that Democrats get control. Well, even if they don't, that leadership fight, the way Hakeem Jeffries has positioned himself behind some of these incumbents that got beat, I mean, they're going to have, I don't know, look a little bit like what y'all had to go through with Kevin McCarthy, maybe getting him the gavel, just vote after vote after vote after vote. But they seem like a rudderless ship right now, with a bunch of people wanting their ship to go in a bunch of different directions.
Think about this, that AOC, Bernie Sanders, that crowd all came out and campaigned for these people. AOC was campaigning against Diana DeGette, and Diana DeGette and AOC are both on the Energy and Commerce Committee that I serve on. And you think about the hostility that's going to be there, the tension that's going to be there. And Jeffries was supporting the incumbents, which is what he's supposed to do as minority leader. I honestly don't know that he'll even make the ballot when they start trying to pick a minority leader in the next Congress.
It's undergoing some changes, and it'll have an impact on the country. But the thing that I think is like really important here is Republicans got to take the ball and move with it, and they really got to point this out. Like, you know, this is something that's been, you know, flirted with in the past during the 20th century. Americans have rejected it, and going into 2028, this is your choice here. Do you want to go in this, like, you know, at best Western European type socialism, or do you like capitalism? Do you like, you know, the lifestyle you have now?
Well, we've got a lot going for us, and I shared this with some folks a while back, and I've talked a little bit about it on the radio, but we were debating three permitting reform bills, and I was managing the debate on the floor of the House, and the Democrat who was handling the Democratic side was Frank Pallone from New Jersey. He's the top guy on the Energy and Commerce Committee. So we brought up the first bill. I made my little spiel for why we should pass it. They go to Pallone, and he goes off on Republicans about health care. Absolutely nothing to do with the permitting bills that we were discussing, debating. So when it came back to me, normally you would go ahead and yield to the bill's sponsor or whatever. I just said, Mr. Speaker, I'm amazed that my colleague would bring up health care when in the one big beautiful bill, we put in $50 billion to transform rural health care. I said, Mr. Speaker, there are literally places in Alabama that are maternity care deserts. I just recently talked to a young woman in Wisconsin who's 8 months pregnant, and she's driving an hour and a half to see her OBGYN. And I said, so we put that in to transform rural health care, and every Democrat colleague voted against it. And then I said, as a matter of fact, the gentleman from New Jersey, his state got $187 million, and he voted against it. Jeff, it shut them down. They can't respond to that. They can't respond to the fact that 51.4 million senior citizens didn't have to pay any income tax on their Social Security income. A lot of them, that's the only income they have. They can't respond to the fact that there's single moms out there earning their living, making from tips. They didn't have to pay any income tax on their tips. They're blue collar workers that on the first $12,500 of overtime, and you rarely make that much in overtime, they didn't have to pay any income tax on that. So we've done a ton to help families, and they can't respond to it. And I think that's got to be part of our messaging.
Last question we'll get you out of here on this America 250, the 250th celebration of this country. Any thoughts on it?
Well, you know, I grew up dirt poor. My dad had about an eighth grade education. He was a logger. Nobody on either side of the family, immediate family, had ever gone to college. And, you know, I was able to go to college and was able to get a job in engineering, worked for a couple of international engineering companies, and wound up getting elected to Congress. And there's just not another country in the world like ours. We've got our problems, we got issues, but this is still truly a land of opportunity. And I just think people need to stop, reflect on what this country's given them, what they've given their parents and grandparents, and the difference that we've made in the world. And Saturday should truly be a day of celebration, but it also needs to be a day of a new commitment going forward. I take people on that time towards the Capitol, and one of the things I emphasize is the preamble of the Constitution says, we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union. That's not just an observation. That's an obligation that falls on every generation, and I just hope your listeners are part of the generation that's going to be part of this great turning point in our history that will really make a bright future for future generations.
Congressman, we always appreciate your time. Thanks for hopping on this morning, and let's talk again soon.
We will, probably about the Braves.
Yeah, well, that's always my go-to. Congressman Gary Palmer, ladies and gentlemen, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 1065.
And a few old cheating songs. Here's open everybody out in radio land. Find the love just as true as mine. Good night, angel. Sleep tight, darling. And close your pretty brown eyes. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland.
To the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us. So it's a lot to this Thursday morning. Programming note, you'll have Fisher House in this time slot tomorrow, but I'll be back on Monday. Dell Jackson, a couple of guests to be named later. I'm not sure who's turning the rotation, if it's Jennifer Fiddler or Shane Stringer, but we will figure that out over the coming days. But you'll be in good hands between now and then. Jason, if Mike really believes that people that support God chosen people are equal to the Palestinians, he's a moron. Ultra Runner, you're right about the beauty of California. I was born in San Diego, but there's no way in hell I would go back. Alabama hits the sweet spot on so many things that are important to me. I'm here to stay and make it even better. Well, that's good to hear. And then Dave writes, I got to go back here a little bit. I'll tell you what, it's politically different between now and the centennial, bicentennial time. And now we had a viewing of the raid on Entebbe Airport at our church parish hall at Magnolia Springs, St. John's. We cheered the Israelis got away. You think that you're going to see something like that now? It was a big deal back then. I think support for Israel is much stronger in the South than it is now. I come from South Korea. They just impeached their treasonous president and voted out the right-wing government. Then they put him on trial for his life. Maybe we should give more like that, be like that more. That was a weird situation, though, in South Korea. I don't know the ins and outs. I remember the movie they made about that, so I was much younger. So... And I know the movie they had made about the raid, it's like Charles Bronson in it, or maybe Chuck Norris or somebody like that. But they, WTBS, back in the day, they'd play those old movies. That's how I learned about it and tried to understand kind of what that was about, but I didn't know it was that big of a a cultural phenomenon here. I guess it was caught up in the news, and the news was what it is at the time. Anyway, that's it for me. Midday Mobile, best of Sean Sullivan coming up here shortly, so you make sure you stay tuned for that. As I said, I'll be out tomorrow, but be back on Monday. Get Fisher House tomorrow. I will try to do better on Monday. Sorry, Phyllis, I forgot to say goodbye. This has been the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5.